was the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in the hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there.
That is the opening of 1974's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, one of the many terrific Rankin Bass holiday specials. And well, here to talk about that, it's our friend Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
I love the sounds of that special. And I understand, sir, that up in Maine, this time of year, they call you Mr. Ten Below in honor of the gold miser. No miser.
I love the misers. I love them so much. What spurred your affinity for the Rankin Bass collection?
I think it was probably when I was a kid. I saw Rudolph. So that comes out in 64. And I was born in 75. And it was one of the only Christmas specials you would have seen as a kid at that time, which sounds hard to believe now with everything just coming at us from all directions, right? Like some proton accelerator. But that was pretty much it. You get the Charlie Brown one. So that was kind of one of your go-tos. A lot of the Christmas films that aired at the holidays, they were on past a kid's bedtime, right?
Mm.
So Rudolph was an early one, and it just seems so imaginative and fanciful to me, and I like the idea of Rudolph is on his own, and as a kid, you feel like you're on your own, and then he kind of gets his, like, this little posse, right, with Yukon Cornelius and Hermie, and that's like what you do with your little friends at that age, right? You find your little buddies, and you have your little group, and I liked how selfless Rudolph was, that he didn't want to endanger his friends. I thought, geez, he's really kind of like a loyal deer. He's sort of like what you want to be. And it was just so fantastically tuneful for me. I remember we had this breezeway off of our house in Mansfield and Great Woods that the concert establishment was named for. It was our backyard. And I'm in the breezeway, and Santa is doing his thing where he's saying that he's the king of jingling and everything. And I thought, you know what? Enough of this. I will not sit down any longer. And I started rocking out hard, like dancing my little self away. My dad walks in, and he was kind of like a stoic guy. And he looks at me and said, enjoying that one? And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. Let's do some of this. So I was pretty much hooked for life then.
I love Rudolph and the nitwits, the turds out there that have turned revisionists and are finding all the things wrong with Rudolph. Just stop yourselves.
In our demonic world of inversion, what's good is bad, what's bad is good, and everything is topsy-turvy, inside out, and not right. Like, if you're looking to be offended by Rudolph and Hermie and Yukon and all of that, you have other things that you really ought to be contending with, I would say, in your own life. And Dickens loved the holidays for their celebratory side, but he also saw it as a time when we would become almost actuaries in our own lives, where we would take stock of what had happened, where we wished to go. It wasn't really so much about just that Christmas. It was about your future Christmases and the person you would be then. And I would advise those people to sort of check themselves with that, with Rudolph. Is there bullying in it? And is Santa, throughout Rankin Bass, it's a very Old Testament Santa. He's not like a good dude. He's kind of hardcore. He's not mellowed enough for like a New Testament kind of lovey-dovey Santa. But kids are bullied. And when you attempt to eradicate bullying from the world and to make us never look and see it for what it is, you're setting up people that you ostensibly care about to have a worse time with it. And I was picked on as a kid. When I was in high school, I was recruited to play college at like Boston College, BU, but I was this person who was working on his writing at the same time. And even then, when you think you'd be like the big man on campus, like Jockstar, I was picked on by people, and I learned to deal with it and to handle myself. And that's why I could be someone who comes on your air and says, as a grown-up, as an adult, yeah, I love Rudolph. And as much as I enjoy having it on Blu-ray, which I can't find right now with the disarray my life is in, there is something precious about watching Rudolph live each year. It's just better live. Mm.
And that's also why we're so happy to have you on our own island of misfit toys. Now, I have a lot of things to unpack here. I want to ask you first about how the abominable snowman led to a story of yours in an upcoming book and the connection to Radiohead.
Sure. So the second one first. If you look at the art design of Rudolph and the Island of Misfit Toys, where you have kind of those glacial moraines and everything and all those weird jagged angles of the peaks of everything and how white that sort of snow is, that it's almost crystalline, look at the cover of Radiohead's Kid A. It is half-inched right from the Rudolph Mise en Scène, which has always just kind of made me like that album, though I think it's their best, a little bit more. And as for me, I have a book coming out called Buried on the Beaches, Cape Stories for Hooked Hearts and Driftwood Souls. And each of the, in the spring, and each of the stories takes place in a different town on the Cape. And you could be from San Jose and have no clue what Cape Cod is, and you're going to connect human characters and everything. But one of the characters, one of the stories, is riding the bus. His life has fallen apart, and he's basically just riding the bus around Cape Cod as he tries to figure out what he's going to do next with his life, post-divorce and everything. And weirdly enough, even though he's going from town to town, there is a fellow traveler that keeps getting on the bus. And this guy had been like a horror host out in California, and he's moved out east to sort of get his own life going again. And he has this catchphrase. When he was a horror host, he was Mr. Chompers on the air. And you know the line from Rudolph, he's nothing without his chompers. And the story kind of builds from there. I used to go to a bar maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, and there was a guy who would come in. You'd be the only one in the bar, this sad sack bar with this guy. And before he could order his first drink, he'd have to solemnly shake his head and say, "I'm nothing without my chompers." I thought, geez, wow, what a weird intertextual aside to the world of Rudolph. It's so pervasive. And then years and years later, it grew up into this titular story of Mr. Chompers.
I look forward to reading that. We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown about the Rankin Bass Christmas specials. And you have some tips for viewing these shows.
I do. You want to screen them live when you can. And I know they cut out some bits, but it feels really cool. It's like we talked about the Twilight Zone Marathon, which is coming back this year, and how even though you're seeing the shortened versions of those programs, it just feels like you're in on a kind of communal Christmas thing when you watch these and know that other people are watching them at the same time. They're great to have on as kind of television wallpaper while you're doing something else. And also, you can find many a ready tip from Year Without a Santa Claus for Halloween costumes, because some of these specials get so, and this isn't even one of the strangest, but they get so weird. And another kind of epiphany for me is when Snow Miser popped out. The first time I saw that, which probably wasn't long after Rudolph, and I've heard people say that he would give them nightmares. Now, these two brothers who control the weather, they hate each other, and it's always irked me, even as a kid. Their names, it's not parallel structure. He is Heat Miser, and the other dude should be Cold Miser, but he's Snow Miser. Yet at the same time, they each have their own song, and it has the exact same arrangement, the exact same bridge. It's like they went to the Rankin Bass Brill Building of Christmas tunes. And that part when Snow Miser, I realized how funny these specials could be. He comes out, he does his song, he's dancing around, and then that little jump cut when the little versions of him come out with the top hat, I just thought, like, oh my goodness, you Snow Miser, more like Narcissistic Miser, but of course no one would get that. I thought it was hilarious. And Mrs. Claus in that special, who is actually Shirley Booth from Hazel,
right?
Remember that not too great show? And she was like in her late 70s when she did that, and she still lived on until 1992. And basically, the entire premise for that special is Santa Claus gets up on Christmas and he says, "Screw this, I'm not doing it this year." And Shirley Booth, Mrs. Claus, is like, "Whoa, you have to go be Santa Claus." And he essentially says, "No, it'll teach the kids that life is real." So he tries to pick up the slack for him, and it goes really awry. And he comes in the 11th hour and doesn't even really save any. It's kind of like one of those Kimball, those 5-2, he scores 5-2 in the ninth inning, and he picks up the save, right, when there's already two up. Santa Claus comes in and basically does it. It's like, yeah, you can throw wreaths of glory at me. Thanks.
Also, would be remiss if we didn't mention the contributions of the great Paul Frees. Always has a place in my heart for his role as Boris Badenov on Rocky and Bullwinkle. But, man, in that hall of voiceover fame, you know, there's Paul Frees, there's June Foray, Mel Blanc, Dawes Butler. They don't get much better than what Paul Frees did.
Frees was so many voices in the Beatles cartoon, and before even Animagic or the Claymation or cartoons that he was in, he'd be like the alien voice in Earth versus the Flying Saucers. He did so much, and if you're wondering who he might be within the Rankin Bass universe, he's basically like 60% of the people. Mm. So kind of a go-to sound for him is he's Santa in the 1969, the original Frosty. He kind of has that gruff voice. In Year Without a Santa Claus, he's Burgermeister, Meister Burger. And he'll play three or four parts in most of them. He's not, I don't think he's in my favorite. My favorite one is the one you played at the beginning. It's Twist the Night right. Before Christmas. And people don't really know that one as well. It's short. It's like 24 minutes long. And it's cartoon. You could either get cartoon or you got the animagic, as the term was. And it's, again, it's so tuneful, and it's that Old Testament Santa. He's saying, he gets an anonymous letter that basically says, you're not the bee's knees, Santa. And I think that's so kind of apropos for right now, like an anonymous letter. Put your name on it, you coward. And so Santa says, fine, I'm not going to your town. And they try to woo him back by building this clock. And a lot of it happens at night, and the skyline, it reminds me a little bit of the skyline of a seaport like Gloucester, and you have mice messing things up and mice and humans trying to fix things. And I know you have put on your Christmas onesie, Mr. Kimball, and hopped around at night to even a miracle. Oh, it's in my head now. Even a miracle needs a hand. That one I could listen to on a loop and just eat candy canes until I passed out and gorged.
I love it. You got to watch them, and now use Colin's tips to enjoy even more the Rankin Bass specials. Visit Colin's website, colinflemminglit.com. Subscribe to his blog. I love the story today. The story you shared about stopping in that little pizza place that you said was short on personality but amazing food with your dad. That's one of the neatest stories I've read.
Oh, yeah, the Town Spa, which is, it's still a pizza place in Stoughton, Mass., but it used to be kind of this Cheers sort of cheap jack place where the restaurant area was above the bar. And I remember we would go there after, like, hockey practice. And I was there one time with my dad, and I think this came up because Harold Baines was a questionable Hall of Fame selection for a lot of people the other day. And we were there, like, in 82, so I'm 6 years old, and watching the Red Sox play the White Sox, and Baines made a throw from the outfield, and I thought to myself, he has a really good arm. And my dad, again, not a huge compliment to Spencer, said, nice throw. I thought, I was even more right than I thought I was, so it was nice little memory and great pizza.
Absolutely. There you go. It's Colin Fleming every Tuesday here on Downtown. Colin, we thank you. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good.